Feeling lost and alone? Looking for validation from your partner, only to find the feeling of rejection and continued frustration? You're together yet so far apart. Now your frustration has turned into disdain and resentment. Your insecurities have begun to affect every aspect of your life. Ironically, you have now become the cold and detached one, shielding yourself from the uncertainties of your relationships. Dr. April Brown has created Bringing Intimacy Back, a series of discussions that are designed to help you reclaim what you have lost along the way. Dr. April will help you rediscover and reconnect to the intimate relationship your heart so desires. Go to www.bringingintimacyback.com today and let the healing begin.
Welcome to the Bringing Intimacy Back show, where intimacy is real. On this show, we aim to help you increase the connection between your higher power, your loved ones, your children, your family. We give you the secret power to intimacy to create a life you love or love the life you create. Well, guys, today is a special day. And on the show today, I wanted to talk about something that many of you guys may be struggling with the pandemic, and then also with having all your kids home and your family. And as women, we're like, how can we do it all? How can we do it all? So as I was thinking about this topic, I was like, who do I know who's doing it all? And I came up with the perfect person to introduce you guys to. Someone that I've known for over 25 years. We went to college together, pledged a sorority together. And so I want to introduce you to Miss Roberta Moyes. Welcome, Roberta.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. Well, welcome to the show. And so on today's topic, we're talking about virtual learning, increasing the family connection. Well, yes. Let me tell you a little bit about Roberta, okay? Because I told you she's an expert in all this. Well, Roberta has been married for 26 years, met a wonderful guy in college, and married, and they have three beautiful children. She's graduated from Florida State with her bachelor's degree in psychology, and she also has her master's in curriculum and instructions from Barry University with a specialization in mathematics. So she is actually a teacher, and she's worked in education for 21 years. Her husband is a senior pastor of a church, which she serves as first lady, which means that's a pastor's wife. She's very active in her church, very active in her community here in Florida, and she's a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. So, Roberta, one of the main reasons why I have you on today is because you are a teacher.
Yes.
Yes, yes. And before you started off in psychology, tell me, how did you even enter into the field of teaching?
Yes, it was an interesting journey, I have to say. I worked in psychology for 5 years. My minor in college was statistics. As a matter of fact, I was so deep into my minor, I was only two classes away from a double major. So I worked in psychology for 5 years, and then I had a rather traumatic incident occur with one of my clients when I was working. My client attacked me, and I decided at that point it was time for me to reevaluate what I was doing. I was a psychology major because I wanted to help people. That was something I always wanted to do. I didn't really know whether or not teaching was the route I wanted to go, though. So I started subbing. I went to sub at a school in the guidance department. And that day, coincidentally, their math teacher decided he was going to quit. It was the first day of school. He decided that he was going to retire early. He walked in, said, I'm not doing this. And so they came and got me out of guidance and said, can you please cover this class? That was the beginning of my journey into becoming a math teacher. And my background in statistics played a huge role in me choosing to teach math because I was, you know, pretty savvy with mathematics. And so the school district called me, which never happens, and said, we looked at your transcript and it looks like you could be certified to teach math. Have you ever considered getting your math certification? Because I had my psychology certification. Right. And I said, you know, no, not really. But at that point, I'd only been teaching math anyway. So I pursued it, and I've been teaching math ever since. And it's just amazing how God places you where you're supposed to be, even when you weren't trying to get there. So,
yeah, definitely. Yeah. What motivates you as a teacher?
I love helping the kids learn. It's so, for me, seeing them learn something new that they've never been able to do before, just, it really makes my day. So I like being able to just help them. I teach them a lot, and more so than teaching them about math, I always throw in opportunities to teach them about life as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, because with teaching, like you said, you love dealing with kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And you actually have a big family yourself.
Yes, we do. Yes. And yeah, ironically, before I went into teaching, I was always the person that ended up volunteering to chaperone youth, and I worked with the youth group, and I was always in some way mentoring and molding and shaping the youth around me. And I kept saying, oh no, this is not what I'm going to do. And absolutely, it's what I've been doing all along. So
yes, wonderful, wonderful. And you know, this show is about intimacy, and intimacy in the sense of a connection, and especially with children, it's really important. I believe it's the foundation. I mean, mm-hmm. that's how we're brought into this world, is through connecting.
Right.
Yes, can you describe in your own words what an intimate connection is with children and with your own kids and as a teacher?
I think the most important thing is just to be genuine. Kids can determine whether or not you're being sincere or not very quickly. And you don't have to go out of your way to do anything special. You just have to be sincere. When you say you care, you have to actually really care. When they tell you they're having a bad day, you know, you have to really take the time to listen to why they're having a bad day, and not be so strict with deadlines and expectations, so much so that you fail to see the person behind what's happening. So just really being genuine and being present in the moment. You know, when I have a student who comes to me and says, you know, I couldn't get my homework done because my mom had to go to the hospital. Okay, at that moment, I'm going to stop and say, is your mom okay? Is everything all right at home? You know, was she able to come home last night? Tell me more about what's happening. Are you okay? And, you know, being just genuine and concerned about the students makes a big difference. And when I'm genuine and I show that I care, they work so much harder for me.
Mm, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm also wondering, you wear so many roles.
Yes.
Hats. Yeah. I think you wear a lot also. Yeah. How do you fit it all in having all these connections with, you know, your children, your teaching, you know, with God, being at the church, husband? How do you as a woman even do it?
It's a lot, but I will say just being present in the moment makes a big difference. Just being present in the moment. Just when I'm at church, being present there, not thinking about what I need to do, not worrying about the grocery list, not thinking about what in the house I haven't cleaned up yet. Just being present in the moment, enjoying the most in that moment. And if you live your life like that, you'll really enjoy what you're doing all the time. There's always something else to do. There's always something mm-hmm. else to do. If you spend your life always thinking about the thing you need to do, you're going to miss the moments as they pass you by. So just being present makes a big difference for me.
Right. And it's psychologically what we should do, and spiritually also.
It is. And I wasn't always present. I have to say, I think just over the years, I've become more present in the moment, just realizing that I could look back on a week and realize that I couldn't remember where I was when I did this, or how many people I saw when I did that. And I just realized I missed all those moments because I was so concerned about the next moment that I couldn't enjoy the moment I was in.
Right. And so you've learned through the years of how to do that.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And now with this pandemic, technology is coming a lot into the, I don't know if you did a lot on technology prior to this.
Nothing like what I'm doing now.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So for you, I know for me, when I first started with technology a few years ago, I never thought about it as being in where you can make a connection.
Right.
At all.
Right.
But nowadays it's one of the main ways. And
it
so,
is.
Yes, yes, yeah. Do you feel like it can increase connection or diminish it? Or what are your thoughts about it?
Both. I feel like sometimes people can hide behind the technology and not take the time to actually talk to people and get to know someone when you see them. But then I also feel like it helps some people who are extremely shy, someone who's not comfortable being out in public and interacting with people in public. If you can do it from behind your computer screen, it kind of gives you the opportunity to say what you're really thinking and what you really feel when you may be afraid to do it in front of someone. So mm-hmm. It just depends on the person. You know, I do feel like some people hide behind the computer. They say some things online that they would never, ever say to someone in person. And I think that's a bad thing. But I've also found that I use, you know, the social mediums to keep up with people I haven't seen in forever. You know, it's nice to be able to see a live picture of you online and see what's happening in your life, even though I can't see you specifically all the time. So I think it has its pros and it has its cons.
Yeah, it does. It does. And it's made it a whole different world these days.
It has.
Yeah.
It really has. Because you can become a whole fake person online that, you know, you can create this new persona that's not even you, and no one benefits from that. But you can also use it as a way to express who you are to people that you're afraid to say something to when you see them.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And you have to use it in all of your roles now, I'm assuming.
Oh, yes. Yes. It's interesting. We are such social beings. You know, my students just say, you know, I just miss sitting in your class. I just miss being in the classroom. And they miss just seeing each other. It's not that they talk to these other people in class consistently. These are not even people they're really close friends with, but just being in the community with other people that are doing the same thing you're doing, it makes a difference. And they miss just sitting next to that person whose name they haven't known all year. They miss having that connection. And so I did try to facilitate a class where all the kids could get together and see each other. That was really interesting, but there was too many kids on, but they all wanted to be there. And they were just like, oh, this is so nice. I'm so glad I can see everybody. And because some of the kids in class with them are not people whose phone numbers they have. They don't communicate outside of school. So being able to see people they've only used to see in school and say hi and, you know, how are you doing? What's going on? They appreciated having that opportunity. So,
okay. Yeah, I was curious about that, whether they were doing, having any social in the learning.
Right. Well, that was only for social. That was not for learning. That was not an educational forum. I told them to meet me for lunch, and it was, we got on for lunch. So,
wonderful. Yeah.
So yeah, they got to see each other. And
important. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You just did that on your own in the sense of.
Right. Helping. To give them a chance to just, you know, connect. Because I had some students who were very withdrawn, very introverted, very shy. And even though they were very shy, there were other kids in class that were shy like them. So they would all sit together and they may have not talked about much, but at least they had each other when they wanted to say that one thing. And, right. and those kids, they don't have each other's phone numbers. They don't have each other's, you know, Instagram tags, and they can't message each other. And so they missed that socialization. And I was surprised how many kids showed up for lunch. So, yeah.
Yes, yes. And I think even us as adults miss that socialization. And so, so when we do these group things, that really does impact and help us.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, definitely. Yes. Well, we're going to take a small break now, but then when we come back, I wanted to get into the meat and bones of virtual learning and how it can increase the family connection. So we'll take a short break at the moment.
During this difficult time that we are all facing, many people are in need of someone to talk to. One option is speaking to a therapist to express your anxieties if you are feeling isolated or just need someone that will listen and help you with coping skills to get through. Dr. April Brown is now accepting new clients and is working with her existing clients through distance video counseling. The services are through a secure online HIPAA web-based practice management platform called Simple Practice. This technology can provide a secure two-way interactive video counseling session over the internet. For more information about video counseling, please email Dr. April Brown at info@draprilbrown.com or you may call 239-565-6921. Thank you. And remember, We are all in this together.
Well, welcome back to Bringing Intimacy, where intimacy is real. If anyone's out there listening and they want to call in, let me just give you the call-in number. It's 888-627-6008, and our topic today is virtual learning, increasing the intimate connection. So, Roberta, there's a lot of us who are out there, many parents who are at home. They're trying to, some are working, and some are working from home, and some, of course, maybe have lost their job. But they're also having to do something we never thought we would do, which is kind of like, I see it as almost homeschooling, you know? Like,
right.
Yes, yeah. And it can get kind of overwhelming.
Yeah.
And especially as I'm thinking of math, recently Sophie came to show me something and I wanted to tell her how to do it, some math thing. But then I remember way back when her teacher said, you know, let me teach them math the way I want to teach them. Yes. So as parents, how do we even go through this stuff? And especially you're dealing with middle school kids.
Yeah.
Yes. 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 And you have a high school kid at home. But yeah. So from a teacher, as a teacher, talking to us parents out there, how do we even go about doing this?
Well, my perspective is this. I feel like I want to give my students exactly what they need to be able to do it by themselves. I think the parents should only have to help with technical issues. Like, I'm having trouble getting this screen to open. I can't log into this website. I don't want them to actually have to teach the lesson, which then changes the way I have to deliver my lesson. And
okay.
So I have to teach it. I record lessons. I do education lessons. There's an interactive whiteboard tablet where you work everything out and you can talk over everything you're doing. And I teach the lesson the same way I would if I was standing in the classroom. Okay. I go through example by example, and then I record them and I upload them. And the whole idea is that the student can watch it and understand what to do and be able to do it. So then, of course, I use my kids as guinea pigs. I was like, okay, look at this and see if you could tell what to do without having to ask your mom for help. Because I know the parents are working at home too. And
right.
So it's essential that the kids are able to do the work without having to ask for extra help. So in addition to my video, I always add in links to other videos that, in case you still need help, watch this video. In case you still need help, go to this website. And I add those into the program as well. And then I use, from there, I go into practice problems for them to be able to do on their own, that self-check to tell them, am I able to do what I'm supposed to be doing or not? So, and then as a teacher, I have office hours every day where the students can call in through a meeting group and we can talk through whatever thing they have, anything they have questions on, they can work it out with me. So the last resort, my absolute last resort, is for them to go to their parents. I don't want them to add any additional stress to their parents' lives already, because working from home is already extremely stressful for most parents.
Okay.
So to throw schoolwork on top of that,
I think
asking for too much. Right.
Yeah.
And then overloading the students with work is another thing too. You have to make sure that you understand that it takes longer to learn the lesson when they're by themselves. So what may be a 45-minute lesson sitting in school may turn into an hour and a half sitting at home.
Okay.
So you have to take that into consideration too when you're loading information into the student. You have to make sure you're not overloading them on one particular day.
Okay. So you made an interesting point that parents should only help out on technical issues. And
That's for middle and high school students. I have to clarify that.
Middle and high
school
students.
Because elementary students definitely need more.
Yeah, they may need more help. But I'm hearing in my mind, and I think I've talked to a few parents who are so worried about their kids' grades. You know what I'm saying? I want my kid to look good. You know what I'm saying? Yes. Yes, yes. So they're quick to give the answer.
Right.
And I've heard this from, other teachers that maybe, you know, someone who was struggling, but now all of a sudden, they got everything right.
Right.
Yeah. What do you tell the parent who's like, you know, I see my kid doing it wrong and I really want to like tell them to erase it and we do it again or turn it in, you know, 100%.
Well, I like for them to turn it in incorrect, actually, because it helps me to see what they don't know. And when I look at the work from the students, if everybody is missing the same thing, it tells me as a teacher that I need to go back and reteach that topic. So when a parent
what you're saying then is that if your child turns in something that doesn't have everything correct, then as a teacher, you get to see what the kids haven't learned or if something.
Exactly.
Yes. But exactly. If everything's correct, then you're just moving on.
Exactly. Which is exactly how it is in class. In class, you know, people volunteer to give answers. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. And every single assignment that I collect does not go in the grade book. A lot of it is just for me to see, just so I can see where you are. Do you know this? Have you learned it enough? And then I will give them something. And everything that goes in the grade book, I label specifically, this grade is going to count towards your final grade. So they know everything else is practice. And it's okay to mess up on practice. Practice is how you learn. It's the conversation we can't have because we're not in class. So if I have, you know, 50% of my students turning in an assignment and they're getting a 60% or less on the assignment, that is a sign to me, okay, tomorrow I'm not going to move on. Tomorrow I'm going to spend more time on the same lesson because they need more practice. But if I'm getting 100s and the 100 is because the parents have helped, it makes me feel like we're ready when we're not. So.
Right.
Yes. It breaks down that communication.
Okay. So there are, and I'm thinking, I know as in Florida, it's going to be virtual through the end of the school year.
Yes.
And I think in some other states, it's going to be that way. So as a teacher, how can you tell the student it's learning? It's through these assessments that you guys are still doing online?
Yes, it is. And for the things I really want to know if they know, I have them work them out on paper because I am math. And I have them upload their work to me. So I look at their work to make sure that they're doing it correctly. Now, I have 130 students total. So they don't upload every assignment to me because it's just impossible to get through all of it. But for the ones that I really want to know, have you learned this concept? I have them take a picture, upload it. And the biggest issue in the beginning was, how do I take a picture and load this into the portal? And so, but now they know how to do it. So they're good at that. And I do look for the work. I want to see that they know what they're doing because that's how I know that they'll be ready for the next math class because they have somewhere to go after they leave me. So I need to make sure they're prepared to get where they're going.
Okay. So we're going to switch hats now.
Okay.
On the same question, how can you tell if your child is actually learning? Let's flip it on the other. Yeah.
It's harder. As a parent, yes. Because I'm looking at the grade that they're getting in our grade book system, it's called Pinnacle. I'm looking at their grade in Pinnacle, but I know in my heart of hearts, a lot of their grade is just participation.
Right.
So for the things that I am able to really assess that they know it, I can ask questions, but I just ask a lot of questions. You know, what did you do in school this week? Tell me what you're doing in Spanish class. What new verbs have you learned? Now, even though I don't speak Spanish fluently enough to be able to tell him if he's saying it right or not. If he can't tell me what he did this week in Spanish, he didn't learn anything this week in Spanish. So
right. It's
having that specific conversation, you know, tell me about all of your classes. Matter of fact, I did that this morning. Tell me about all of your classes. Let's start with first period. What'd you do this week? Tell me what this teacher asked you to do. Tell me what you learned. Tell me, you know, what'd you have to turn in? Because all of the things they learned doesn't necessarily correspond to an assignment they had to turn in.
Sometimes
they just have them reading, watching a video, doing something. So it's just having that very targeted, specific conversation. Tell me what you're doing in your class. And then just really listening that they're telling you something different than they told you last time. So you know that they're gathering some new information.
Yes. And so I know you're dealing with teenagers with hormones. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming parents are listening. And it's like, how do I even get my teen to even... Because before, when they used to come in the car and you pick them up, nothing. How do you get them to?
that's a little different for me because my background is psychology. So I kind of force them to have conversations with me. My question is never, how was your day? My question is, tell me what happened today in school when you were walking the class. Tell me what happened in lunch today. Tell me what happened in the class that you had the hardest time in. Very specific questions.
Yes.
So I will ask them very specifically, you know, tell me about this class. I know you were studying for a test. How was the test? Did everybody else seem to do okay? How did you feel about it? You know, we talk about, I ask very specific questions and they have turned around and done the same thing to me. They walk in the car and go, so mom, how was your day? Tell me three things about your day. You know, they start with the whole but that is how we do things. You know, tell me about on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, okay. 10 being the best day ever, 1 being the worst day. Tell me about your day. If I don't have to ask you any other questions, just tell me right. where your day rates. And then it's, do you want to talk about it? Is it something you want to talk about? Is it something you don't want to talk about? Just to check in and see how they're doing on a daily basis.
Okay. Yeah.
Now that we're home too, you know, how do you feel about being home? How do you feel about not being able to see your friends? Are you still connecting with your friends, at least with FaceTime? Are you talking to them, you know, while you're playing games? Because I know the social aspect of what we're missing from school is equally as important as education.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So as a mom, you do a lot of questioning, which is good.
Yeah.
Because I know there are parents who are out there and they're afraid to question and ask questions about their kids. And so as some moms have told me, how do I sometimes even know they shut the door, a teenager or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they're working. I don't know if they're on Instagram or all these other TikTok, I guess is another mm-hmm. one.
Yes.
What are some guidelines that you use to make sure your kids are doing schoolwork? And then how much is too much on the computer? Because they have to.
Okay, that's a totally different question. So how do you know they're working? Okay, so my high schooler, I know she's working because she's a senior and she does not want to, she doesn't want her grade to be impacted negatively. She's self-motivated. So she gets to work in her room because I know that she's going to finish the work. My middle schooler is not quite as motivated. And so he has to work at the table with me. So that typically means that he doesn't start working until I'm finished with my office hours so that I have time to just make sure he's on task and he's finishing everything he needs to finish. Okay. And so it's different for right. every child. You know, everybody's not going to be the same. This week in school, he had a goal to finish everything by Thursday. He did it. Okay. So that was a goal that he set for himself because he wanted to have Friday as a day where he could just relax. He didn't want to have to make up work and get stuff done at the last minute. And so that was a good goal he set for himself. And we talk about that every week. We talk about, so next week, what do you want to do? You know, he has two classes where things are always due Friday by midnight. So I said, for those two classes, let's think of a plan. What do you want to do? And he was like, well, I think I'll do those two classes first. I would have suggested that, but I'm glad he thought of it.
Yeah.
And then the other classes, you know, he can get to it when he gets to it. But then this week he said, you know, it was a light week, so I decided to do everything early. And so that was something that worked out. But again, if he's not sitting in front of me, he is talking on the phone, he is playing a game, he is watching a movie, he's the one that has to sit in front of me to get it done.
Okay, so one of the things that, or a couple of things you suggested was setting goals with your kids for the week.
Yes, and having a place where they do their work. When I say come out and get your work done, he knows exactly where I'm speaking of. We have space set up just for him to work on his schoolwork, and that's all he does there.
Okay. And then and you also mentioned an action plan, like how are you going to get to your goal?
Right. Right. And I try not to give him the steps. I try not to give them the steps. I want them to figure out what it is they need to do, because I feel like when you think of it on your own, you're more invested in your own plan as opposed to me telling you, oh, I think you should do whatever. You also asked how much time was too much time online.
Yes.
I do feel like more than an hour consecutively in front of a computer is too long. I think you should get up and take a break, walk around, have a snack, stretch your legs, come back and do something else. You shouldn't sit continuously in front of a computer for more than an hour, because they don't sit in class for more than an hour in middle school, maybe an hour and a half in high school. So you don't want to get in the habit of just sitting in front of the computer all day without getting up and moving around.
Right, right. I don't think it's also physically healthy, too, to just sit.
It's not.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
It's not.
So do you have a schedule?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a loose schedule. The schedule is you have to get up in the morning, take off your pajamas, get dressed for the day. That is what they have to do. Like, I do not want to see you in pajamas after you're working on schoolwork. I feel like you have to just change your environment. Change
right,
the way
exactly.
you... it makes a difference. So get up, change clothes, eat breakfast, and then get started. I haven't been very strict about what time they get up and get started because they tend to work late at night. So they'd rather trade off sleeping late and staying up later to finish schoolwork. They don't mind finishing like 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening if they get to sleep until 10. So, and I'm not going to, for me, that's not a battle that I need to fight. That's not a big deal to me. Just whenever you get up, it's fine. But when you get up, your day starts and you stay up. You get up, you make up your bed, you change clothes, you get started for your day. And then we don't go back to bed until it's time to go to sleep. I don't want them hanging out in their rooms all day and sitting in the bed. And it gets to be old really quick.
Right, right. And I think even when we were talking last, you even kind of pushed them to go outside.
Yes. Oh, yes. They go for a walk or go bike riding every day. So we get out and we go, and I go too. We get out and we go. Yeah, you have to get out of the house. We can't sit in the house all day.
Yes. Yeah. Then that it's just, yes. Yeah. Do you also have or have had experience or heard from parents who have kids who have a hard time even sitting to do this, you know, computer work? Because I've worked in schools and I know that there's some who have, you know, ADHD and a variety of stuff.
I haven't heard that from any of my parents. And as a matter of fact, some of my students who struggle with sitting still in the classroom have been turning in their work quite diligently online. And I think it's because you can get up and move when you want to at home. It's not, you don't have to sit consecutively for 53 minutes or 55 minutes and work while you're sitting there. You can look at the lesson, you can watch the video, you can stop, you can get up and do something else, come back, work on the assignment. There's no time limit on the assignments that I give. So you can do 3 problems and get up and come back later. And they've been very diligent about getting their work turned in. So I think just having that flexibility has helped the students who need to get up and move and have that desire to not sit still for so long.
Okay. So it's actually, like you said, it's been able to give them more flexibility.
Exactly.
Into their school learning and that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Yes. Good, good, good. So also, as you're saying, you also have a high schooler.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Is that a little bit different than dealing with the middle school in the sense of, and you said, I mean, because she's a senior, she's got her mind focused,
right?
You know, close to the end.
Right. It is different because it's really more of a management position for me with her schoolwork. It's just, you know, have you finished everything? Okay, good. It's a lot different. It's a lot different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And with high schoolers and especially seniors, this year is so critical for them, but it's also devastating that it's different.
Yes, it is. It is. Lots of changes this year. You know, I think when we got the call that grad night was going to be canceled, that was the first blow. And then when the refund check came in the mail, it was like, okay, this is really not going to happen. You know, they were planning for, she's a senior class officer, so she was part of the planning committee for the prom. They, you know, I actually went with her to look at her venue, and they were very invested in getting ready for the prom. And now, you know, the conversation is, are we going to get our deposit back, and where are we going to do this activity or that activity? And so things are, it's very different. It's very different. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. How did you even have that conversation with her?
Just how are you feeling about today?
Okay.
And usually it started with, oh, I'm so disappointed. I'm so disappointed. Now it's just like, just give me my diploma.
So they get into this. It's unfair. It's always me that these things happen to.
Yeah. I was just thinking the class of 2020 is going to have some awesome class reunions because they're going to make up for all the stuff they didn't get a chance to do. And, you know, I think their first one, if I were in that class, I would plan it earlier than 10 years. I would probably do my first one at 5 just because they didn't have a chance to have all the stuff they didn't get to do. Right. They can come back and do it and, you know, have a chance to see each other one more time before they go on with life because most of them will be graduating from college by then. So,
And so one of the things you just mentioned that I just thought of, and when my daughter went off to college, they talked about this as a skill that parents need to do is resilient. resiliency. Yeah, so this class of 2020, and even the kids in your class, they're learning how to bounce back.
They are. They're learning to be resilient. They're learning that life does not always go as you plan. And exactly. That the best made plans can change at the drop of a hat. And so what do? You just pick up and keep going. You're not going to stop. Right. You know, you keep going. And so that is a life lesson they're learning right now. Things are very different than what they planned, but life goes on. And as long as you're alive, you can make something better happen tomorrow.
Right. And I think many of us don't learn that lesson till we're in our 20s.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. It's the blessing, like you said, is they're learning that lesson now.
Yeah, they're learning it now. And it's not such a hard lesson. I mean, a lot of times when we learn these life lessons, we're learning by ourselves, but they have company. They have other people to talk to about what they're going through. Everybody is experiencing what they're experiencing now. So they have someone to talk to, they can fall back on, they can lean on. And so it gives you the extra level of support that I don't think I had when I learned some of life's more difficult lessons.
Okay. You talked earlier about how you were helping your students get some of the social learning. Mm-hmm. And as a parent, how do you help in the sense of the social learning from a parent's perspective?
Making sure they stay connected with their friends is very important. Like before we were on quarantine, you know, I would fuss with my children about being on FaceTime all day, get off the phone, you know, you shouldn't be on the phone constantly. You got to get up and enjoy time with your family. Now family's together all the time. So now I'm actually encouraging, have you FaceTimed your friends today? Have you had a group chat with your friends? Which friends have you not talked to? You need to make sure you reach out to those friends and, you know, how are their families? You know, when you talk to your friend, make sure you ask them how their family's doing. I've gone into really pushing them to stay in touch with their friends because that connection that they used to have outside of the house, they don't have anymore. And so where I used to fuss with my son about being online, playing video games and talking to his friends online, now I'm like, oh, you need a new set of headphones so you can talk to your friends a little longer, you know, because it's important that he needs that socialization. She needs that socialization. They need that time with their friends, not all day and all night, but they do need that time with their friends. Yeah.
Right. One thing that's amazing about you as a parent is that, you're flexible and you have changed and adapt with the times.
Yes.
And adapt to each kid, of course.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you have to. you really don't have a choice.
Well, no, there's some parents who just try to discipline everybody the same way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My three children are completely different kids. So what worked for one just would not work for another. And their personalities are so very different, and how they respond to correction is different also.
Right. Mm-hmm. So on the virtual learning and the virtual aspect, how is it affecting your 20-year-old?
Wow. Well, I think he's impacted the most because this semester he was taking a break from school. He was just working. So now that he's not working because his job, he worked in the school system with kids. And so now that he's not working, he doesn't have anything else to do. So he really dislikes it very much because he's just sitting around twiddling his thumbs. So I think what it has done is helped him to realize that he's ready to do something different. He's online looking for classes to take, just something, because he's tired of just sitting around, you know, with nothing to do. He really misses going to work every day. He does. So
it's a little bit of reinventing himself in some.
It is. It is. Just deciding, you know, I call it a time of self-reflection, like deciding, is this the path you really want to be on? You know, is this the coursework you really want to take? Is this where you see yourself, you know, 10 years from now, what you're doing now, is it going to get you there? How can I help you to get there? And so we've been spending a lot of time just deciding where we're going to go from here. Okay. So, yeah. Awesome. But one thing he has learned is that he really enjoys working with children, which I've always seen, but I'm happy that he sees it now too. And I can see him having a future in the school system as well. So that would be, I would love to see him do something like that. But again, that's one of those things I'm going to let him figure out by himself. So, yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I love that approach that you have with your children and that kind of stuff. Yes. So we're going to take a short break. And in this break, Roberta, we'd love to hear about, because I know besides this, you also a first lady. And so mm-hmm. we would love to hear about how that is and for you to promote that. And then we'll continue talking on tips about connecting.
Okay. So now?
Yes, now. Okay. Yes.
All right. So my husband is the pastor at Bethel AME Church in Pompano Beach, Florida. And we do have a Facebook page, Greater Bethel AME Church. And we do have Facebook live streams now at 10 o'clock every Sunday because we are practicing social distancing. And we would love for you to join us on Sunday at 10 a.m. on Facebook Live. And for those who would be interested in any other aspects of the church, we do still have Bible study and church school and things like that that we've done virtually through Zoom. This has been a great opportunity for us to learn how to integrate technology into our worship services. So we're learning and adapting with the times at church as well.
Awesome. And so you guys are doing also Bible study.
Yes, we are. We're doing it's through Zoom. We're doing Bible study through Zoom. Yes.
Okay. Awesome. Good. Okay. Well, I wrote down that information and we'll state it again at the end of the show. So with so many roles, before we go into more tips, how do you practice self-care? Because you give and give. We didn't even talk about the marriage of 25 years in this. Responsibilities there, and of course, housework and a variety of other stuff. What do you do for self-care?
I enjoy sitting outside on the patio and just listening to music. That is one thing I do that all the time. And when I need a moment to get away, I just go outside and sit down, take my speaker, take my phone, play some music, and just take a moment to just relax and decompress. And sometimes there's so many things going on that you just need to get away from everything and just stop. And I do that. And I enjoy doing that. I also enjoy very much listening to books on tape. Okay. I don't have any genre in particular that I care about more than another. I just look for the best ratings. And so far I've been okay with finding books that I like. And I just enjoy sitting and listening to a book on tape as well. I don't read the way I want to because I usually don't have time to sit down and put a book in front of me and read, but I listen to the book on tape in the car when I'm driving from one place to another. And then when I'm getting ready to go to sleep, I'll sit there and listen to a chapter before I go to bed. Those are things I just enjoy doing just for me.
Okay, good, good. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that you just find time for yourself to self-soothe and to be fed.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, yes, yes. So in this last part of the show, we talk about tips. So tips on how to increase family connection. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. What are some tips?
I think it's very important to just take the time to speak to everybody, like genuinely talk to people. Don't be, you know, I always say, I don't need a roommate. I don't need roommates in my house. You know, my family members are important to me. And I always try to take the time to really connect with them, each one individually on a daily basis. You know, everybody has time that they know mom's coming in the room to come talk to you about what's going on. You can sit in the room all day if you want to, but I'm invading that space and we're going to sit and talk about what's bothering you, what's on your mind, what are you happy about, what are you enjoying with my children. And I try to do that. Well, I do that every day with all three of them. Okay. And before our quarantining, my husband and I used to have date nights every Friday where it was just our time to go out and get away from everything and enjoy time together. We haven't been able to go away, but we have to find ways to be more creative to just carve out that time at home as well.
Mm-hmm. So you can do you can do date nights at home because your kids are old enough to entertain themselves.
They're old enough, but you'd be surprised how much they love coming to talk to their mother and father when we want them to stay in their room. So they will come, you know, if I'm sitting on the patio with him, all of a sudden the door opens and here comes somebody. Oh, what are you guys eating? What'd you get? Where are you going? Right. What are you guys doing? And, you know, and I'm glad that they enjoy being around us. I don't ever want that to stop. I'm happy that they enjoy spending time with us. So I'm okay with that. But when we go out, it gives us our time away. Like, and even still, you know, we take time to just go for a ride together, even though we're not going anywhere.
Right. Even if you just drive to the church and sit in the park.
Exactly. Exactly. So it gives us that time to just have with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's critical for the top to spend quality time to be on the same page.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And again, that's one of those things that you develop over the years. It's not something that you walk into doing perfectly, but it's something you figure out, you know, over time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. What are some other tips for connecting during this time period where we don't know how long we're just, do you guys all, how can I put it? Since everyone's home all the time, do you get on each other's nerves? Because now this, you're just all, you know, there's just so many people home all the time.
Not in the sense that you would expect them to.
Okay.
No. And that's only because I was very intentional about making sure the kids did not fight with each other when they were little. It was a very intentional thing that I did when I noticed they would start nitpicking with each other and when they would, you know, I do things that I felt were malicious and just intentionally mean to each other. They would always get called on the table for it. And so now that they're older, they don't do that because they know that that's something that I don't expect to see them do. So
when we get into more detail of that, because there are parents out there listening who are dealing with that, who are dealing with brothers and sisters arguing over stuff.
Well, you know, okay, I'm going to tell you, when I first noticed it, they used to watch this one particular show on TV, which was a kid's show, but the brother and sister never got along. They always fought with each other. They always picked on each other. They pranked each other. And so then I noticed that the kids were doing the same thing at home. And so I pulled them all together and I said, look, what they do on TV is scripted. This is not real life. They're not even really related. At the end of the day, they're all going to go someplace different. But at the end of our day, we're all at home. And so we have to learn that we're here for each other and you're the only person that each other has. At the end of the day, you have each other and nobody else. And so you have to act like you are there for each other. And I said, and since television is making you act this way, we're not going to have television for a week. And I took their television away for a week. And after that, they found a way to communicate with each other in a more appropriate way. And I haven't had to do that again since then. Now, from time to time, I will have to, you know, have a talk with one or the other and say, okay, that was a little bit harsh the way you handled that. I need you to handle that differently the next time it happens. You know, how could you handle it differently so that I'm not upset? Because I don't think that's a good way to handle it. And so we would talk about it. But whenever anything happened, I was just like, any little thing, I made a big deal about it so they wouldn't do anything bigger. And so I made a big deal about every little thing. If you went in your room and closed the door because you didn't want to see your brother, okay, we're going to talk about that. That's not what we're going to do. If you need time alone, then you need to say, you know what, had fun. I just need a minute to myself. I'm going to go to my room. Say what you're feeling. Express yourself. Don't take it out in a very negative and harsh way because, you know, 30 years from now, you don't want your brother to look back and feel like you don't love and care about him because of what you did now. Right. So it was a very intentional shaping of their behavior to make sure that that wouldn't happen. And they're very good with it now. Now, if they have an issue, they will say, you know, I just need a minute. Mm-hmm. I just need a minute. And then if it's a bigger issue, they may come and go, Mom, I need you to come talk to so-and-so because this is what's happening. And they pull us in. They will let us know what's going on. But I would say they've learned, you know, to adapt to being with each other a lot. So.
Right. So you did a great job of communicating to them the importance of having that family bond.
Right.
You know, yes.
And then another thing that helped with that too is because my husband is an AME pastor, we do move a lot. And when the children were younger, we moved, you know, when he would get assigned to a new church. So we were not in one place for a long time. And when I said to them, you know, you really are all you have, it meant something to them because when we first moved anywhere, they were all they had. They really had to learn to depend on each other and enjoy each other's company and spend time together because until they made new friends, it was them. And so I think just the mobility of our lives made them learn to depend on each other a little bit more than maybe other siblings.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great, great thing. And I know also that you guys are very, that you pray as a family together.
Yes, we do.
And I think that has a big impact too.
It does. It does. It does. And, you know, when things happen, I try not to become like this parent that they're going to talk about behind my back and go, mom pulled out the Bible again. But when they do stuff, I will say, you know, well, what does the Bible say about that? Honestly, what does it say? And they go, well, I don't know. I said, well, why don't you Google it? You have a Bible app. Look it up. What does it say? What do you think you should be doing? I mean, like, let's just have a quick conversation about what you should have done versus what you did. Right. And just understand that these are not all my opinions. This is something coming from a higher power who has more expertise than myself. If it's written in the Bible, you need to learn how to do it. So, right. Yes. So.
Right. And that's very important in how you didn't give them the answer. You guide them to find the answer.
Yes. And that's the result of my upbringing. Because whenever I had a question, my parents made me look things up. And it wasn't Google. It was an encyclopedia and a dictionary. Yes. And sometimes even I had to go to a library to look it up so that I could come back and have a conversation with you about something that you could have just told me. But it was how I learned. And I have taken that and I've used it with my children.
Yes, definitely. And so even as we've been talking about this virtual learning, it's also using it as a tool to help them find the answers.
Right. Right. You know, because I do tell them, I won't always be here to give you the answer, but you do need to know how to find it. So if I can't give you the answer, you can't just stop. You have to figure out how to do it when I'm not here to tell you what to do.
Right. Which is a great way to go about doing that. And so if you have one last tip for our families out there who are listening,
spend time together. Now, right now, we're kind of forced to spend time together, so everybody's doing it, but be intentional about spending time together, especially including my oldest, who's 21. He's not always the one that wants to do, you know, the little things we want to do, so we always try to find something that everybody wants to do, and we spend time together doing that one thing that everybody enjoys doing. Our family loves to eat, so we like to go out to restaurants and eat, and it's something we enjoy doing together. The younger two like to do things like go to the beach. He doesn't really so much want to go. So when it's time for family time, we choose things that everybody wants to do, and we do it. And then we did start going into, you know, letting one person choose and then everybody kind of do it. But they always ended up choosing places to eat. So that has kind of become our thing. We like to go out to eat. We like to try new restaurants, and okay. We like to
do
go
you guys
out
get
and
takeouts.
I'm sorry.
Are you doing a lot of takeouts now?
No. Not since we've been home. I've been cooking more. We've only eaten out maybe once or twice since we've been home, but on a regular basis, Saturday was usually our day. Saturday or Sunday, we would go out to eat somewhere. As a family, that was always something that we did.
Right. As a family, do you guys play games or do other things, activities together?
Movies. We watch movies together at home. Yeah, we'll pick a movie. And again, finding a movie for five people to watch that everybody wants to see is, again, another. Yeah. But we can always find something. So we have, you know, every now and then we carve out time, just come sit together and watch a movie together. Sometimes when we're cooking something new, we'll all end up in the kitchen trying to, you know, watching and cooking and doing things together. But just being intentional about including everybody. If somebody's still sitting in their room going and saying, you know, come out your room, come and hang out with us. Everybody's in the kitchen. Come, let's go just sit with us. You don't have to do anything. Just come sit. And so just kind of pulling everybody together. So,
yeah. We like to eat out too a lot. And so now what we're doing is we're cooking, but Sophie's only 9. So she creates these little menus of restaurants.
Okay.
And we are at a restaurant now.
Okay. I love that. Well, now that we've been cooking at home more, I was just telling the kids, you know, let's start looking for some new recipes to try. So let's have a new recipe every week to just try one new thing that, you know, we can all make together and try it. And so we've started. We have some ways to go, but it's been fun doing something different.
Yes, yes, which is mm-hmm. which what this whole experience has. It's been something different, but
right.
As we stated earlier, it's making us more resilient. And as you've been talking with us, it's helping us develop as humans and
right.
and reflective and stuff. Yes.
Exactly. 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 And learning to appreciate the time you have with the people around you.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, Roberta, it has been an honor to have you. Yes.
I've enjoyed the show very much. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, definitely. And I want to for you to state again how they can find you, the Greater Bethel AME, how they can find you guys.
Yes, on Facebook, Greater Bethel AME Church, and we stream live on Sundays, Facebook Live, 10 a.m. for our worship service, and we also have a website, BethelAMEChurchPompano.org.
All right. Thank you so much for being on the show. You're welcome back anytime.
This
has been the Bringing Intimacy Back show. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.